Hello and welcome back to PracticingEnglish.com. This is a special edition podcast. Today I'm publishing The Octopus's Garden as one complete story. If you have listened to this story in the two parts I published 2 weeks ago, podcasts 179 and 180, you'll remember that I have dedicated this story firstly to the children of Gaza, who are suffering so terribly during this horrific war. Secondly, I've also dedicated this story to my brother Nick Bilborough and the Hands Up Project team, who worked for so many years to give the Gazan children a voice in the world. Please see the introduction of podcast 179 for more details of the Hands Up Project. For this special edition, which is a B1 and B2 level story, I include 8 comprehension questions for you to read before you listen. The comprehension questions are in the show notes or episode description of your podcast app. You can find the answers below the questions. The Octopus's Garden by M.A. Bilborough. This story is copyright M.A. Bilborough. Dunya Yusuf Hussan al-Baghouti sat on the white sand and looked out across the deep blue of the Mediterranean Sea. Somehow, at last, she had found comfort here. That feeling of her insides being pulled and torn by iron hands, a sensation of pain so powerful it had made her dizzy and even physically sick, was now reduced to the gentle rise and fall of her chest following the rhythm of the rolling waves. Then the thoughts and memories returned, but this time she was ready for them. They came gradually, obeying the slow rhythm of the breathing sea.
My dear brother, Abu Jamal, there are things you just do not understand, said Yusuf Hussan Omar,
and he walked around the courtyard, his hands in his rich black hair, his expression hard and serious. Dunya sat on a rug in the corner, almost hidden by the rubber plants, drinking a glass of honey lemonade and watching the scene in front of her. Perhaps her father did not even know she was there. Usually, when he had these arguments with her uncle, he would stare at Dunya until she took the hint and went to her room. The warm autumn sun shone through the opening above the courtyard, but it was cool and shady on the ground floor of their house. Dunya's mother sat on cushions, a blanket over her knees, and her back against the coloured ceramic tiles of the courtyard wall. Next to her there was a book which she had put aside when the argument had begun. Abu Jamal sat on a chair, his elbows resting on his knees, a worried look on his face. He picked up his glass of mint tea, but did not drink from it.
"Brother," said Abu Jamal, looking down at the marble floor, "everything to me seems quite simple. May Allah give you the wisdom to see the truth before our beautiful home and family are split in two. The truth, shouted Yusuf. The truth is that our dear dead father, from God we come and to God we return, left half the house to me and the other half to you. That's the truth. But, interrupted Abu Jamal calmly, that doesn't mean drawing a line down the middle. We have always lived here. Your family one side of the house and my family the other. But we have shared the courtyard and we have shared the reception room. We should continue to share. Only in that way can we all live in peace.
Yusuf looked up at the opening over the courtyard and raised his hands high, as though searching for inspiration and guidance from Allah himself.
Exactly. Of course we'll continue to share, he said. I'm just saying that the reception room, which is at the entrance on my side of the house, and always has been, should belong to me in the testament, officially. Furthermore, I am the older brother. But meanwhile, I'll let you use the reception room whenever you wish. My brother Yusuf is all generosity, answered Abu Jamal. But if we are to draw a line down the middle of the house, why should we not draw a line down the middle of the reception room, so that half the room also belongs to me, officially?
Yusuf's hands went back to his hair.
Brother, would you draw lines down all the rooms? Perhaps you would draw a line through my bathroom. Am I to draw a line down the middle of my toothbrush too?
Keeping very quiet, Dunya smiled into her honey lemonade. Then her mother lifted her head, her long black hair falling over her shoulders. Dunya gazed at her mother and thought how beautiful she always looked.
Yusuf, she said, smiling, perhaps we should leave the argument for another day. I think we can feel assured that my dear brother-in-law, Abu Jamal, has no intention of drawing any lines in your bathroom, and least of all on your toothbrush, on which he makes no claims at all, neither as a possession, and even more wisely, nor as something to share. We are in difficult times. The bombing is becoming worse. We should pray to Allah to ask his protection of our home, one of the most ancient and beautiful in all of Gaza City.
These words were the last words Dunya's mother ever spoke on this earth. There was a scream above. Dunya lifted her gaze from the sea and watched a seagull float on the cool breeze. When she lowered her eyes once more to the waves, she remembered a time a year earlier. In the same courtyard, at home, sitting on her grandfather's lap, Dunya was 9 years old then, and her mother would say she was too old to sit on people's laps, but she felt safe and secure there on the knees of this big smiling man, his face lined with wisdom and the experience of so many years. He was called Husan al-Rashid, or usually just al-Rashid, which means one who is always good. On this particular morning, Al-Rashid sang a song to his granddaughter.
"You know, Dunya," he said, "we can sometimes feel trapped here in Gaza. Israel on two sides, Egypt on another. Then there is the sea. Even there we cannot travel far without being stopped. It is a cause for much sadness and frustration among our people. I remember one day I went out on a boat with my friend Khalid, the fisherman. I used to help him sometimes when I was not working, with pulling in the nets. I enjoyed it. On one occasion, I remember the water was very clear, and the surface of the ocean was like a mirror. You could even see the seabed, despite the great depth of the water. Suddenly, we saw something huge, bright, red and orange, moving far below the boat. I glanced at my friend. "What is it?" I asked.
"It is Al-Lajabu, the wonder," answered Khalid. "He is a giant octopus, yet he is different from all the others, as he has seven legs. He is the prince of the sea around here. He comes and goes where and when he pleases. He is master in his own land. He can never be caught in a net, and we would not want to catch him. For us, he represents the freedom we have never had."
"A giant octopus with seven legs?" said Dunya, astonished.
"Yes, it is a curious thing, isn't it? It reminded me of a song by the Beatles. Have you heard of the Beatles, Dunya?"
"I think so," she answered. "Weren't they a pop group?"
"Indeed they were," replied Al-Rashid. "And very famous in Europe when I was a boy. Although here in Gaza we didn't hear much pop music even then. But as a teenager, a little older than you, another friend of mine had some Beatles records, and even a record player. I used to go to his house to listen to them. I'll try to sing you the song. Your English is good, isn't it, Dunya?"
"Yes, Grandfather, I think so. At school, we write plays and stories in English and act them online. I've learnt a lot of English recently."
"You're a bright girl, Dunya," said Al-Rashid, and he looked at her fondly. "You know, I don't remember all the words, but it went something like this," and he began to sing. "I'd like to be under the sea, in an octopus's garden, in the shade. He'd let us in, knows where we've been, in his octopus's garden, in the shade. We would be warm, below the storm, in our little hideaway beneath the waves. Resting our head on the seabed, in an octopus's garden, near a cave. We would sing and dance around, because we know we can't be found. I'd like to be under the sea, in an octopus's garden, with you."
"The octopus's garden sounds like a lovely place to be, Grandfather," said Dunya.
Al-Rashid looked deep into her eyes and he nodded his grey head. "Yes, it does, doesn't it, Dunya? It certainly does."
There was a scream above. Dunya lifted her gaze to the sky above the courtyard. A bright flash. Everything went white. Then an enormous bang split the world. The rug beneath her was shaking violently. So it rose into the air and flew slowly around the courtyard, which had now become silent. When the rug had once more dropped gently down with Dunya sitting on it, the whiteness vanished. Dunya first thought it was snowing. She stood up and opened her left hand, but the snow that fell onto her palm was hot. She quickly pulled her hand back. If it hadn't been for the familiar rubber plants in front of her, Dunya would not have recognized where she was. The house had gone. Piles of bricks and stones lay around her. She thought it bizarre that, instead of a wall, she could see her father's furniture shop across the road. Then she saw her mother's arm and head, bricks covering the rest of her body. Dunya had seen death before, when her grandfather had died last January. Now she saw it again in the person she loved most. She forced herself to turn her head. As she did so, she saw other members of her family among the bricks. Her little brother, who had been playing in his room. Dunya could make out a toy car in his tiny hand. Her aunt, who had been cooking in the kitchen, still wearing her new apron. Dunya's body began to shake, and as it did so, she dropped the glass of honey lemonade she was still holding in her right hand. It smashed silently into pieces on the floor. A dreadful feeling of guilt rushed into her head as she realized it was one of her mother's favorite glasses. Dunya bent down and picked up two of the larger pieces of broken glass and tried to put them together. What would her mother say? Then there was blood on her hands. She had cut herself. Strong arms lifted her to her feet. A man was looking into her eyes and shouting at her. She recognized him as one of her neighbors. She saw that he was shouting, but she could hear nothing. There were other men running around. One had tears in his eyes. Then another man pointed at Dunya's bleeding hands, so the neighbor picked her up in his arms and ran with her. Dunya cried and screamed in the hospital for 7 days and 7 nights. She had not really been aware of the time that passed, but had heard that comment one day from the doctors talking to each other. So she stopped crying and screaming. The doctors also said the drone had landed in the reception room of her house and exploded, killing every member of her immediate family and her uncle's family. They assumed Dunya could not hear their conversation, but now she could hear perfectly clearly. The feeling from her insides of being pulled and torn by iron hands had stopped her from eating, but now her terrible hunger allowed her to eat something for the first time in a week. A doctor unwrapped some of the bandages from her hands so she could hold a spoon. The next day, Dunya had a visitor. He introduced himself as Muhammad Ahmed Mansour and was her mother's cousin. He was a young man with kind eyes. He said he felt very sad at the death of her family. He explained that it had been several years since they had visited Dunya's house, so that Dunya would probably not recognize him. Muhammad said that she could come and live with him, his wife and son, in a flat in the south of Gaza. He told her it was safer in the south, and she no longer needed to be in hospital. There was a school near his son's school where she could attend classes. Dunya looked at him, but neither smiled, nor cried, nor said a word. But she took his hand as they left the hospital together. Dunya's gaze was now right where the sea met the sky. There was no remote land on the horizon. She wondered how people could live in a place from where no friendly countries could be seen. It was like being shut in a room where the only window was too high up to see out of. Dunya looked back at the waves, the only remedy that helped calm her pain. The buildings were tall and ugly in the area where Muhammad lived, and the modest flat was not beautiful like her house had been in Gaza City. But the welcome Muhammad's wife, Fatima, gave her, with her hugs and kisses, was the first sign of real human warmth Dunya had received in days. And she collapsed in her arms, yet no tears came to Dunya's eyes. Ali Muhammad was Muhammad Ahmed Mansour's son. Dunya usually found boys of her age foolish, irritating, and insensitive. But Ali was different. He was 10 years old, like Dunya. When his mother introduced him, he stood up and shook Dunya's hand, looked at her in the eye, and nodded his head sympathetically. Fatima told Ali to show Dunya his pet mouse. He kept it in his room in a rectangular cardboard shoebox. Ali picked the shoebox up carefully and took off the lid. A small brown mouse sat in the corner, cleaning his face with his tiny paws.
"He's not a rat," Ali assured her. "He's a real mouse. He won't grow any bigger than this. That piece of cheese is his food just there, and that's a pencil I gave him to play with so he won't get bored."
Dunya was deeply moved. A world within a world. This tiny creature that seemed somehow so involved in his face washing, apparently completely unaware of the larger, more dangerous world around him.
"He's lovely," said Dunya. "But there's no light in the box when the lid's on."
Ali looked at her in surprise, and Dunya realized those had been the first words she had spoken since the day the drone had fallen on her house. Ali looked back at his mouse.
"Yes, there is," he said enthusiastically. "Look here,
I've cut a little window at the top, but it can't be too big or he could get out.
He might like a bigger home,
suggested Dunya.
Yes, he might. I'll try and find a bigger box, Ali answered, and he smiled.
That night, the bombs fell again. Muhammad told his wife and the two children to get up and get dressed.
The block of flats in front has been hit, and so has the block at the end of the street. I don't understand why. There is no Hamas here. What is going on?
Muhammad walked up and down the living room, his hands in his hair. It reminded Dunya of her father, just before the drone struck, and the iron hands in her stomach gripped her insides painfully.
Let's pack what we can and leave, Muhammad said. We can go to my parents' home. It's just a village. Perhaps we'll be safer there. First, I'm going to see if they need help across the road. Nasir and his family live on the third floor. I must check to see if they're okay. Then I'll meet you in the car.
And he ran out. Dunya tried to assist Fatima with packing the cases, but she really didn't know how she could help. Dunya had no possessions herself, of course, except the thobe she was wearing. When Fatima, Ali and Dunya left the flat, Dunya had just the mouse in his box under her arm. The street was strangely lit with orange flames and people running and shouting in all directions. Then Dunya felt the hot snow on her face. She tripped over bricks, broken stone and glass. So the images she had previously pushed away from her mind came once more, and Dunya panicked. Dunya just ran. She ran as fast as her legs could take her. She ran and ran. Eventually, she left the streets of the town and found herself in a dark lane. The street lamps disappeared, and although she could not see her feet, she followed the bright stars, clearly visible in a black sky. Dunya looked down from the waves and picked up the box. She opened it and looked inside. The mouse looked up at her and asked to be let out.
I think you're a long way from home,
said Dunya,
but better the world you don't know than the one you do.
She lifted the box up gently onto its side, and the mouse walked out and onto the sand. Before he ran off, he turned around and waved goodbye. Dunya stood up and walked down to the sea. Suddenly, the waves lost their energy, became lazy, and dropped into the deep. The water became as clear as drinking water from a glass jug, and the surface so still it was like a mirror. She walked in. The sea was pleasantly warm as it soaked through the thin material of her thobe. The water came up to her waist, and it was then that she saw the octopus. He was sitting on the sea bed, looking up at her, with his seven legs stretched out around him. The octopus seemed to be waiting for her, inviting her into his garden. I don't believe Dunya intended to slip down beneath the surface. I believe she just collapsed from tiredness and hunger. Although by the time Muhammad, Fatima and Ali arrived after their desperate search along the beach, They just found an empty shoebox left on the sand and footprints down to the water's edge. Dunya was nowhere to be seen. And that is the end of the story. Until next time, goodbye for now.